This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. Washington, D.C. is a dateline, and it is an industry. Perhaps more than any other city, the capital is a place where the marketplace of ideas has been overtaken by the just plain marketplace. Even political gridlock is good for business.
Nothing gets done in Washington, Bob.
My fixer and spirit guide, Mark Leibovich.
The only thing that gets done here is that people get rich. It is a city in which we have not so much Democrats and Republicans, but millionaires.
All Leibovich sees is an orgy of self-dealing, a culture perpetuated by, exploited by, and occasionally indulged in by the media. For instance, there is the symbiotic relationship between cable news channels and political operatives, who equally benefit when partisans are anointed on-air wise men. MSNBC cohabits with Al Sharpton and ex-presidential press secretary Robert Gibbs. Fox has punditized Democratic influence peddler Lanny Davis and GOP sorcerer Karl Rove.
I can't think of a single significant promise or pledge made about the Affordable Care Act that has been kept by this administration.
Money also fattens the political economy whenever the press pumps up its own audience by playing and replaying campaign smears. Ironically, while underreporting the money trail leading to the smearers.
Fearful the ads questioning the senator's war record are having an impact, the Kerry campaign has responded with a new TV ad of its own to be broadcast in three battleground states.
And if the press and the political class are really adversaries, what are we to make of events like the White House Correspondents' Dinner and its endless associated party crawl? Media organizations spending fortunes to host the crowd they're supposed to be scrutinizing. It all brings to mind Milo Minderbinder in Catch-22. It's all for the syndicate, and everyone has a share. I'm not speaking of graft exactly, certainly not the Jack Abramoff bribing congressman sort. It's more like a mentality, a buy-in to the trappings of ambition when public service and the coverage thereof becomes an industry. To better understand those impulses, I paid a call on one of the most prominent dealmakers, a man who monetizes Washington-born media-fueled celebrity like no other.
I represent 300 and some television news correspondents, producers, anchors with their employment agreements.
Lawyer Bob Barnett of the firm Williams & Connolly, situated literally between Capitol Hill and K Street. The man has more clients than I have Facebook friends.
I also help a lot of people who leave government from the Senate, from the House, from the Cabinet, from the White House, shape their private sector duties.
That's why you've been described as a doorman to the revolving door.
What I'm basically doing is helping them determine what their real goals are and helping them fit those goals with the opportunities that are either presented to them or that I can help them seek.
There are, of course, laws and ethics regulations governing the cashing in process, and Barnett makes sure his clients don't run afoul of them. But he is not unaware of unseemliness. It is, in fact, on precisely such grounds that he declines to mention his mega-famous clients out loud, because one simply wouldn't. So, as I stand at his office bookcase, he silently points to one Barnett-represented volume after another, permitting me to narrate.
Bill Clinton, Bob Woodward, Sarah Palin, Elizabeth Warren, Ben Bradley, Hillary Clinton, James Baker, David Gergen, Dick Cheney, Charles Krauthammer, Alan Greenspan. My goodness gracious. Katherine Graham, Edward M. Kennedy, George W. Bush, Madeleine Albright, The Reagan Diaries, Tim Russert. Yeah, okay. That's a pretty good client roster.
And yes, those were major media figures stacked jacket to jacket with senior government officials.
Was a time that we in the media were kind of ink-stained wretches in rumpled suits, duly and unglamorously reporting the doings of government and politics. And now some number of us are stars ourselves. We are players. We are bold face names. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
They become recognizable. They become controversial. They become the subject of attention. Nothing they can do about being well known from the work they do in their day job, from writing books, from appearing as talking heads or whatever. But the best of them try to maintain a sense of dispassionate objectivity. Some do it better than others.
So that's one way for a journalist to tap into the Washington, D.C. economy. Another way is to simply switch sides. And 'twas ever thus. 20 years ago, Wall Street Journal reporter Jeffrey Birnbaum, author of The Lobbyists, was on C-SPAN talking about the people who trade public service for private opportunity.
It's played out hundreds of times over the years. People who came to Washington to work on the Hill and to try to, you know, do good, and they ended up in many ways doing well.
And by well, he means Birnbaum understands the almightiness of the dollar. In another book, The Money Men, The Real Story of Fundraising's Influence on Political Power in America, he framed the problem most succinctly. Quote, "We all know vaguely that something is wrong in Washington, especially with its money culture." Thing is, Birnbaum is no longer at the Wall Street Journal. He's at BGR Group, which describes itself as a powerhouse in lobbying, public relations, and investment banking. Yes, like many Washington reporters before him, the man who spent a career explaining the influence peddling trade has traded up.
I moved from being a journalist to being an advocate, which I am quite happily. And it's my job to help clients in the way that they would like to be helped, to help them advocate their positions.
Does your role as an advocate for clientele sometimes force you into a position that would have made you extremely queasy as a journalist because you have personal or political issues with the client?
It's my job to advocate positions, and I don't take on clients whose positions, as you say, make me queasy.
For the record, last year, BGR's clientele included insurance, gambling, and defense, plus the Republic of Kazakhstan, ruled iron-fistedly by President for Life Nursultan Nazarbayev. That made me wonder aloud about Birnbaum's threshold of queasiness.
Have I walked into the dark side?
No, you haven't.
Why haven't I?
You're going to have to. Hold on 1 second.
Here he's gestured for me to turn off my tape recorder, and so I did, whereupon he explained that Kazakhstan is no longer a client. But anyway, even though it's never had a free and fair election, it is evolving and also so loaded with oil, uranium, and other resources that even the Obama administration sucks up to it. Then back on went the recorder.
I think that it's a misunderstanding of what people do in Washington. To the extent that a journalist, for example, is a fair broker of conveying information, and you consider that to be a public good, then it is a public good. But people have very different views about what is a public good.
Evidently. But also different views about what just smells funny. And so I wanted to hear just one more voice to understand how all these blurred lines appear, not just to the public, which already loathes both politicians and the press, but to the actual bad guys, the scavengers who themselves feed on the carrion of lost altruism. If you are a jackal, what do you think when the watchdog starts sniffing your hindquarters?
If you're cozy and comfortable with a media star, a media commentator, a media celebrity, it's likely the case that they're just not as effective as a journalist.
Ladies and gentlemen, convicted felon, ex-jailbird, and born-again ethicist, Mr. Jack Abramoff.
Out of social obligation and out of filial approach to their new friends and their cocktail party buddies, they're likely to forego the kind of hard journalistic approach that others will take. Not with everybody, but certainly with their buddies. This is the way things have evolved. You know, this is a business.
As we spoke, we were days away from an event where precisely such fraternization would take place, in black tie, no less. The White House Correspondents' Dinner. What message, I asked him, does that send?
Well, if I were a journalist and I wanted to be taken seriously as a journalist and somebody who had the public's trust in mind, I think it's highly unlikely that I would ever don a tuxedo in Washington, D.C.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.